station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on the internet. It's time for Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday. It's December 19th.
Yay.
We're moving forward till Christmas.
Yay. One more day.
One more day.
And I go away.
Really? You got big plans?
I do have plans.
Oh, okay. You're not going to share
them. Thank you very much.
That's okay. Are you going out of town or something?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm going out of town tomorrow after the show.
Wow.
Yay.
That'll be nice.
I know. I'm really excited.
So you're going to go till after Christmas?
I'm going for a couple days, and then I'll be back, and then I'm going...
You're
going
to do Christmas here at home?
Yeah, I'm going to do Christmas here and in L.A.
Right.
And then, well, actually, I'll be back, and then Sunday I'm doing... Actually, this is really fun, and they're supposed to be on the show at some point, but I'm having the San Diego Zoo come on. Guess what they have?
What
zip lines.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I
know. Love those.
So in the morning, I'm going to do zip lines at the safari park. And then I'm going to go over to Kavalia. And then on, when is Monday? I don't know what I'm doing Monday. I'm going to do movie day Monday. And then I'm having my own little dinner party on Tuesday for my birthday.
How cool.
Yay. I'm going to go to Disneyland during the day and then have like a potluck dinner at my house.
Is Disneyland open on Christmas?
Duh.
Really? Yeah. I didn't realize that. I don't know. I would think they want to let their employees celebrate or something.
No.
No?
They hire all the Jews.
Okay.
This is where you'd be working.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like in Israel, you know, on Saturday they hire Arab workers.
There
you go. Yeah, because they can't work on Saturday.
That's really funny. Well, here we hire the Jews.
Yeah, I guess.
And then we work on your holidays, so I guess it all works the same.
Yeah, a Jewish Disneyland, that sounds good.
That's really funny. Yeah. Well, you know what? It is kind of true in a way. Like, I have friends that live in, they're like very, very religious. What do you call them? I guess they're not really...
Hasidic or something?
I get you can't touch the lights and all that.
Yeah, Orthodox. They're really
Orthodox.
Like, yeah.
So it's funny because they're really cool. And like, I'll go over their house and my friend lives in their backyard, like in their guest house. So I've been over there and we've drank with them before and stuff, but they're like, they can't touch the lights.
Really?
So like the phone rings and they can't ask you to turn the lights off either or to do anything. So they have to be like... So, there's something ringing. You want to see what that is?
Really?
They can't ask me to answer the phone.
Wow.
So they have to. It's so weird. And I'm like, will it be a phone? Oh, let me see. It's really funny.
I mean, isn't it bizarre that people live like that?
It's, you know? I find it so weird and so strange. And they'll be like, there's something that's really bright in here. It's so bright. Ow, my eyes. And I'm like, do you want me to turn the light off? Okay. You know, it's really funny.
Wow.
And they're really cool. Like, they're totally cool and down to earth. And, like, we'll drink wine, like I said. And we'll have, like, I've eaten dinner there. And it's just, they're so funny. And it's, like, a big Jewish family. And, but they can't touch the lights or anything electronic. Right. And I'm just like, this is such a weird religion. Like, this is so weird. I don't understand. And why can't you ask
well,
me
to turn it
off? Well,
it's only on the Sabbath, though, you know, because you're not supposed to perform any work.
So not to send out. But how is flicking on a light switch
Well, you
work?
See, that's the thing, is they go back to medieval times when they would have to light a candle or something. You
but
know, they would have to light fire.
Medieval.
And fire is supposed to be work. You're not supposed to turn it on. So the same with electricity and all that
how
stuff.
How is scratching a match work? I just go like this is a flick of a finger. And with well, I could technically
I'm
do it
I'm just telling
with,
you what it is. I don't know why it's
with two
like
fingers,
that.
I can two-finger a fire. Sounds ridiculous. But I'm just saying, do you see how dumb this sounds?
Yes, I know. I know. It's hard to subscribe
just,
to that.
It
you know?
Just makes no sense to me. But I entertained it. And then it was fun because the kids were over there. And, of course, I'm like, now I'm going to be the little brat that gets them all wound up. And I did. And then they were like, okay, now you're walking then home. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I was like, that's fine because on the walk home, that's a couple blocks home, I'm going to wear them out. Right. That's what I did. Yeah. I wore them out. I'm like, who can run faster? You know, and by the time they get home, they're all tired. And it's like, sweet. Well, now you have your kids back. And I just ran them out for you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
She's like, good. Anyway.
Yeah.
They're my Jewish friends.
So yeah. I mean, religion can be strange at times.
I
you
find
know,
it
all
very
religions
strange.
Are like that. And it's, you know, because it emanates from like thousands of years ago, you know, and they still try to implement these customs today.
And it just
doesn't work.
It makes no sense because thousands of years ago, we didn't have all these electronics called, and then there was light switch, flick it on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that was such hard work. I'm sweating from it.
Yeah.
Really? But okay, I'm not going to knock.
Everything is symbolic.
I know. And we've had these discussions because, of course, I sit there and I'm asking why, why?
Yeah.
I want to know why. This makes no sense to me. And that's the thing. Like, I'm open to all kinds of different things and I'm not judgmental. I like to know what, I just want to know why.
Right.
I want to know the thought process behind it. Like, I have to understand it. And if it makes sense, then I respect it. If it makes no sense, I have no respect for it. I mean, I'll respect you.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I think, and I'll let you know, I think this is completely asininely retarded. And I would never in my right mind raise my children this way to think this way, too. So stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, religion, yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. But, oh, yeah, so I wanted to point out one thing that I totally forgot to talk about the other day that I want to say, because I said I would say it, and I'm going to. So, have you ever been to Home Restaurant in Los Feliz?
No.
Don't ever go there.
Okay. Home restaurant?
Yes.
Okay.
You know what really stinks is I have been going there for years, and I knew them really well, and I love the place. Usually it's a good hangover place that you go to afterwards. Mm-hmm. But I will say that we went there Saturday morning after my party, and we were all excited, and there's just, you know, three of us, like, yeah, we're going to get food. Perfect. You know, and it wasn't like we were being, like, ridiculous or anything. We just were hungry, and we wanted to get food.
Right.
So I went in, and I sat down, and I know everyone there because I've been going for years, and I had a friend that I've worked there, and I know the owners and everything, and which I haven't made them aware of yet, but I'm going to say this anyway because I'm so irritated.
Yeah.
So I sat down, and it was kind of cold. And that we had moved the heater closer to us, and one of the worker guys had turned it on for us so we could have the heater.
Right.
And there were a couple of people sitting around us, and they wanted the heater too. So we're sitting there, and a couple minutes later, this guy walks up in regular plain clothes and moves the heater. And we said, excuse me, can we move the heater back? And he's like, no, it has to be over here for this table. And we're like, but there's nobody sitting at that table. And we're cold, and so are the people next to us and the ones next to us. So we want to move it back. And he's like, no, absolutely not. And he was being really rude. So I got up, and I moved it back.
Yeah.
And he moved it back. And then I moved it back again. And I said, this is staying here. And he's like, no, it's not. And I'm literally, I mean, it was stupid. We were like arguing with moving the pole back and forth. And I'm like, get off the pole. And he's like, no. And I'm like, get your grimy hands off the pole. Like, and he's like, no, it's staying here. And I thought he was a customer because he was so rude and so, I mean, so mean and so weird. Like, you don't treat people like that ever. It was just very odd. So I finally was like, fine, take it. And I let go, and he kind of like fell backwards. It was kind of funny. And I went and sat back down, and I'm like, guess he was really that cold. I don't know. And then I was surprised because he didn't even sit down. So I was confused. And then he's like, I'm the general manager.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's the way he treated you?
That's the way he treated us.
Wow.
And so I could not
That's
believe it.
That's the worst
it.
Fucking manager
I
I've ever heard.
I was so upset. And I've been going there for years. And I was like, well, clearly you're new because I've been coming here for years and I've never seen you before.
Wow.
And I asked one of the other guys who was like, because 5 minutes later he comes. He couldn't even do it. He sends a waiter over who I knew, the manager, the regular manager who I knew very well. And he goes, I'm sorry, Brigetta. You have to leave. We can't serve you.
Wow.
Yes. And I said, you can't serve me? Why? And he goes, the general manager asked us to have you leave. And I said, because I wanted the heater? That doesn't make any sense. And I go, how long has he been here? And he's like, less than a year. And I'm like, okay, because I don't come in there anymore really that often. But when I do come in, it's during the week, so he's not there. And it's this manager who he's known me forever. And he's like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I agree. I think this is so stupid. But he has it out for you.
Wow.
For moving a heater.
Yeah.
But what general manager, I mean, I didn't know he was a general manager,
no.
Who would treat a customer like that? It was absolutely ridiculous.
I've never heard of something like
that. So when we left, we were like, see this guy right here? They're kicking us out because we moved the heater. So don't move the heater. Yes, we did yell that. But I wanted to share the story because I was very upset about it. And I am, you know, writing on Yelp about it.
Good.
And I already tweeted and I already Facebooked and that reached out to 6,000 people. So how about that? But I'm upset. Like, this is just not how you treat people.
Right.
And I thought maybe he has a thing against women. That's kind of how I took it in a way. Because he was like kind of like the way he was attacking and being ridiculous. Mm. It was just, I mean, it was so insane.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to share that. Home
okay,
restaurant
well, thank you. Don't
on
ever
Hillhurst.
Go there.
Don't go there.
Yeah. Cool. And, you know, and that's disappointing because you go to a place, you feel at home there, and then
right.
suddenly one day somebody new pops up there
right.
and treats you like crap.
And it wasn't like we were being like crazy obnoxious drunks. You know what I mean? It wasn't, you know, what you can do sometimes and be like, we were just, you know, we're gold.
Yeah.
And it was afterwards that I was like, well, now I'm letting everyone know why we're leaving, why
yeah.
we're being kicked out. We're being kicked out because we moved a heater. Really? So anyway,
yeah.
I said I was going to talk
see
about
your
it.
Point.
I was going to, and I talked about it. So, you
okay.
know, I did my duty of letting them all know that when we left, that's what I was going to do. So
yes, you did.
I did it. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Well,
I
you
mean,
know what
I wouldn't
is?
Expect anything less.
It's when I get mad, I'm like, and that's the thing. That's I've watched my temper for the past couple of years. I've watched it for a while. I get mad, I'm Italian. You know, I'm like heated, fuming, destroy you mad. Like, I want to destroy you now. You know, that's like, it's like Rise of the Machines.
Yeah.
Literally, like, I will now kill you. Like, but, you know, I've learned to calm myself down from you know, my healing
yeah.
things and whatnot. And it's actually, it's great. Yoga has really, like, centered me in a way.
Yeah.
So I do it in other ways.
It's hard to get through life being angry all the time.
Right. You know? I don't need to get angry. I'm just literally going to let everyone know that don't go there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to Yelp about it because I know that irritates people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Once you put one bad review there, man, it really ruins it for them.
But here's the thing. The power of my mouth is getting everyone else to write the same things. So you mess with the wrong person. When I'm mad, like, everyone write on Yelp. Hear this? If you love me and you truly love our show, you will write... You will go to a home restaurant and you'll say, because you kicked Bridgetta out, I'm now going to be an asshole.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to go there and just raise holy hell.
Okay,
all right, no,
sounds good, Bridgetta.
Anyway. All right, back to being nice again.
Okay. Well, we have a very special guest in the studio, Bridgetta, that I invited to the show.
Yay.
And her name is Kelly Nicholson. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Hi, it's a pleasure to meet you both.
Yes, and she's a little nervous, but she'll be fine. You'll see by the end of the show. By the end of the show,
you're
you'll
fine.
Want to stay for another hour.
Okay.
You
yeah,
will.
Well, once you get me going, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It'll be easy.
Shut me up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you live out here, and were you born in L.A.? Is this where you were
born?
No,
I'm originally from Ohio.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Where in Ohio?
A little town called East Liverpool.
Uh-huh. And where is it? Nearby.
It's near Pittsburgh. It's right on the border.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. Oh.
So, yeah. All, she hears Pittsburgh what? And she's like, she doesn't... Because of football. Because
of Shittsburgh.
Oh, no. The Steelers.
Yes.
Sorry.
Shittsburgh.
I loved you.
Shittsburgh can die and they can drink cyanide
okay.
in their urine. This is where the meme comes out. It's football. It's football. Gets,
yeah.
I'm very upset.
She's a
right
Baltimore
now.
Fan, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, a big fan. Okay. So she's into that. Then she doesn't like Pittsburgh. But I've never been, you know. I
no.
mean, I heard it's not a bad place.
It's beautiful.
Is it really?
It's
Ohio's
a great
beautiful.
Place to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very limited thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I didn't realize that, you know, it took me a long time to overcome my upbringing
right.
To, you know, think broader of
it's,
the whole world, of everyone.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's like the Leave It to Beaver little
yeah.
neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And,
I know
and
you, mean.
You know, everything revolves around the kids and the families, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great way to be raised. But it's, like I said, very limiting.
It keeps you naive and stuff,
yeah.
right? To the rest
yeah.
of the world.
Yeah. And, you know, that's fine. If that's what you want.
Right.
But I wanted more. I just wanted, you know, my search for truth
yeah.
and justice
mm-hmm.
and all of that.
So that, did that start early on in your life?
I think so. I don't, it's been a progression. I just knew, I remember standing my senior year of high school at the end of the year in the hallway when school was in session. So I was alone. And I remember just thinking, you know what, I want to know a lot about a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just, I
yeah.
really, and I didn't know what, being from where I was from.
Yeah.
But I knew I wanted to know more. I knew there was more out there, and I just, you know, went looking for it.
Yeah. So you had this natural drive to learn and mm-hmm. discover new things mm-hmm. and stuff. And so you grew up there. Did you have a good childhood?
I did. I had
really?
A lovely childhood.
Really?
I had parents who adored me, and my mother baked cookies, and she was the ideal homemaker.
My mother baked cookies.
Oh, yeah.
So it is
I'd come home
to be
from
her.
School, and you just smell the cookie smell coming out of the doorway.
Wow.
Walking in, and, you know, she taught me and my girlfriends how to knit on our front porch in the summer, and, you know, just a really great family, great women role models.
Really?
So yeah, so
any siblings? Do you have siblings?
I have a sister.
Oh, really? Yeah. Older, younger?
She's a little younger, 3 years younger.
Younger?
Yeah.
And so you were two girls at home and the parents mm-hmm. and stuff. Did your parents stay together the whole
no,
time?
No, my parents were divorced when I was a baby.
Really?
But they were both doting good parents.
Right.
I mean, I really didn't know otherwise. And my dad was wonderful. He's passed away.
Mm.
And I miss him terribly. Great man, a good man.
But he stayed involved. It's not like those absent fathers and stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, he was
good for you.
There, I was daddy's girl.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah.
So, but what was it like growing up and not having dad at home? I mean, did that feel weird or...
No, I didn't know better.
Yeah.
Because they were divorced when I was a baby.
That's true,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, I went and saw Dad. And I have to be honest with you, I'm not emotionally attached to the Steelers these days.
Oh,
the
good.
Only attachment is my dad.
Yeah.
He was a big Steelers fan.
Oh,
and
really?
I would always be with him on Sundays.
Yeah,
so, I knew,
that kind of reminds you.
I knew who Terry Bradshaw was and Franco Harris. And
I can forgive you.
Way more than a little girl.
You're talking
about
the
football.
70s, 80s. Yeah,
yeah, I can way
forgive
back
you.
When.
Yeah.
As long as you don't like...
It's a new day, so, Brigitta, don't worry. I don't know anything. Now.
Yeah.
As long as you don't like Rape Burger, we're good.
I don't even know their names. Okay. I don't know any of them. I don't watch it. I have some friends that are Steelers fans, so I, you know.
By the way, I'm going to suck on the lollipop you gave me right now.
Okay, but not on the mic, please.
Why not?
She wants to be able to listen to the interview later, I'm sure. So this is cool. So at what age did you decide to leave there?
Well, I went to college at Ohio State when I was 18, and then from there I went. I have to remember now. Oh, you're taking me
so
back.
So you moved away from home,
well,
right?
Well, yeah. Then I went to Columbus. So I was still in Ohio, and then I moved to Orlando, Florida.
Mm.
And I stayed there about a year, and it was too humid. My hair would go very fuzzy and curly,
really?
And that was a big deal.
We had a house there, so I know.
Did you go there for school too?
No. Oh. And I was briefly married.
Oh, okay. I figured she'd say she followed the man or something.
No.
Right?
We went together, and he was my match. He was a good guy.
Really?
I was too young.
Uh-huh.
We were both immature. And so it didn't work. It was over pretty quickly in a flash.
Wow. How young? I mean, were you still in your teens?
I was 22.
Oh, wow. 22, okay.
Because I'd gone to college already, went to Florida.
Well, that's not too young. I mean, maybe in today's...
For me, I was too young.
Really?
I was emotionally immature.
Yeah.
And also being a strong woman.
Yeah.
You know, he was Italian.
Really?
We did have those clashes because he thought he was the boss and I thought I was the boss. I will say this. Several years ago... We reconnected, mm-hmm. and we're, you know, friends. We don't talk all the time. He's married, but to a lovely woman who's very nice. But he told me, I just wanted you to know that you were always right. That was so nice to hear.
Oh, but with all the fights and the arguments?
He said, I wish I would have listened to you. Because I've always been very practical. I'm a very logical, practical person. And even back then, like when we were getting married and planning the wedding, and, you know, he's like, okay, whatever you want. And I really only cared about the dress. Like, the dress was it. I just wanted a pretty picture of me in a pretty wedding dress. And everything else just seemed like a waste of money to me.
Right.
So I've always been very practical that way. And I was practical back then. I always wanted to have my own business. And I thought we'd start a business together. And, you know, he fought me on things because I think the male ego sometimes doesn't want a woman to tell them what to do or suggest things. Or,
that's true.
And I'm not very... diplomatic that way. I'm not very manipulative. I'm like, this is the way it is. This is what I think. This is what I want. What do you want? I'm just practical. I'm just logical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so his ego, I think, got in the way a little bit, and that was his way of telling me, you know, I'm sorry that I wasn't more cooperative, because I think we would have, you know, had a good run of it.
Yeah. Right. Did you guys meet in college?
No.
No.
No. He owned a modeling agency that I modeled for.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And actually, my sister dated his best friend, and we were just, you know, all in this little community of people that we knew each other.
So. Yeah. See, I wonder how many all these agents and stuff date their clients and stuff. You know, I mean, it's so easy, you know.
It's true. That's probably why they own the agency.
You see them all the time. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Just like those guys that become hairdressers, you know, and they're straight, you know. Mm-hmm. And they do it so they can get all the chicks they want, you know.
Oh,
not
okay.
a bad business to be in.
Yep.
What did you go to school for?
Business administration.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
And you graduated in that?
I didn't finish for odd reasons, but I still continued with my education, and I became a bartender actually, and I learned more about people and business.
Mm-hmm.
If you really pay attention, I mean, you can do it and not be present. But I'm very analytical, so I paid attention to everything. And
what sign are you?
I'm a Leo. And I totally relate. When you were saying you always want to know why,
yeah.
Me too. I'm like, why? Explain why to me. And I will search and dig, and I like to know, well, when you do this, why would you do that? And why do people act this way? And why did? But I studied. I really studied human nature from bartending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my education. That's really where I got my greatest education. In business, you know, I learned about sales techniques and what makes someone want to buy something instead of something else.
And this is just from talking to people and stuff,
Yeah, just watching and, you know, making suggestions. And, of course, learning how to handle customer complaints.
Yeah.
I can relate to that in the restaurant. I've been general manager of restaurants. And that was so the wrong way to handle that with you. I wanted to pipe in and say, wait a minute, let me go talk to this guy.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I've worked in customer service for years as well. Like, my father owns a huge corporation. I started working there when I was really young. And I've worked in hotels and restaurants for years. And
the first thing he should have done is said, hi, miss. You know, I'm so-and-so.
Right.
I'm the general manager of this place. What can we do to accommodate you and keep you guys warm? Let's figure this out.
Right.
It might have been a fire hazard that it was moved. So he should have said, but what can I do for you?
Right.
Instead of just, too bad.
Well, he moved it. He grabbed it out of my hands. And then I had my hand on it. And he unwrapped my hands off of it.
Wow.
I was like, get off me. Like, it
horrid,
was like,
horrid man. Bad manager.
Yeah.
He should take my class. I teach a management class. So he should come and take it. We should go. I'll go give him my business.
You need to get in touch with the orders. That's what you need to do.
Well, I am. Yeah, I am working on that because I can't find what to do with their email.
Because he has to answer to someone, and that's who you need to go to.
Oh,
definitely. So so you went in Orlando, right?
Yeah, then I went to Orlando.
And so after you got divorced, you were alone there. What did you do then?
Well, I had friends, and I only stayed there a total of about a year. I was a cheerleader, too. If you remember the defunct USFL.
I remember that one,
A cheerleader for the Orlando Renegades.
Really?
I was kind of a little mini celebrity in Orlando. Everywhere I went, I signed autographs.
Wow.
Because that's all they had there. They didn't have anything else.
Yeah.
And the cheerleaders, the football team was losing every game. So the cheerleaders were the only thing that was really interesting. And I was the cheerleader of the year. So, you know, I did TV
that's
shows.
That's awesome.
So it was kind of fun, but I just really, it was so easy for me in Orlando.
You needed a challenge.
Yeah, I like more of a challenge, and also, like I said, just like the fuzzy hair and being all hot and sweaty and humid. And then my friend lived in New York City, so I went to New York City next.
Oh, I see. Okay.
To live with one of my best friends.
Uh-huh. And how long were you there?
I was there a year.
A year?
And it's something every young person should do.
Is live in New York when they're young, right?
Fun.
Yeah. I know. It's a happening city, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
I had a blast. And I really like the New York mentality where people are more honest and in your face. And I'm more of a New Yorker than an L.A. person.
So am I.
You know,
can you tell?
Yeah. I just don't like the phoniness. I don't like hypocrisy. I will call you out on your hypocrisy. If
Good.
I see it, I'm going to point it out. People don't like that. They don't like it when you show their faults.
So in New York, people seem to be more honest and straightforward?
Oh, yeah, they're aggressive, they're honest. You know where people are coming from.
Mm.
Instead of, you don't have to call someone else and go, is so-and-so mad at me?
To
you think they're mad at me?
Out.
You have to have these conversations.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure out, like, what's going on. Instead, they're just like, yeah, you know what? I'm mad at you. I have a problem.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this.
That's true.
So I prefer that.
Yeah.
But it can be a great abrasive. That's why they say New Yorkers are abrasive. Some people are more fragile. They don't like the truth. They don't want to know the truth. And that's another reason, like my little hometown, people there are very polite and nice to each other, but then they turn around and talk behind each other's backs and say horrid things. And so they're not, and they think they're better because they're nice. And it's like, no, you're not nice. You don't get it. You're really not being a nice person. You think you're nice. You're projecting an image of being a nice person, but you're not really nice.
Right. So if you liked it so much, why did you only stay a year?
The snow, I guess. I think probably more than anything, the snow.
Really? You didn't like the cold, huh?
Yeah.
But that's where you were born in a...
Yeah.
Wasn't that a pretty cold place, too? Yeah.
That's why I left there, too.
Yeah, you see, and I always think that people that live in the cold eventually get used to it, you know, because that's all you know, but you never get used to it, huh?
Oh, some people don't, and I'm one of them, and I will tell you this. When all the little kids were out playing in the snow, I was inside in the house. I would sit in the window. My little sister would go out and play. She could play all day. She loves the snow. She's more rugged. And I think I'm just fragile that way. It was like torture to me. It was really miserable. It wasn't worth the fun. In high school, the kids would go to the country club and sled, and it would be a very big social thing, and I would miss it. I never went once.
Wow.
My whole life has been spent trying to stay warm.
Aww.
I carry coats with me, even in California. I've got coats. I remember standing in the summer at the movie theater with a big heavy winter coat in my arms, and my boyfriend was like, "You're so embarrassing." I said, "But at least I'll be warm."
Yeah, exactly. Aww. And now it's been really cold, huh? Mm-hmm. Can you believe yesterday? Yeah. Wow, you know, with the cold wind and everything. We're not used to it, you know, here. So you get tired of the cold weather and you decide California, right?
Well, I had an aunt and uncle in California, and my best friend was like, "Yeah, let's go to California." Okay. So we came to California.
You've never been here before?
I had been here on vacation when I was 12.
Oh, okay.
And so. I remember at that age standing on the beach, and they built a bonfire. And I thought that was the coolest thing in life because I grew up watching those beach movies on Saturday afternoon.
So funny. Right.
And I just always remember that. And I believe in spirituality, and sometimes you're drawn to certain things. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I didn't come to L.A. to like be an actor or an actress because that wasn't even a job where I come from. I wasn't even a possibility. That's something other people do. I just wanted to be where it was warm, and I felt like there was just more here. I didn't know what.
Right.
Right.
But I was drawn, and I had an aunt and uncle here, so I had a place to stay.
Yeah, that's cool. helps, huh?
Yeah.
And they were in L.A. or somewhere else
in
California?
They were in Garden Grove.
Garden Grove, that's like Orange County.
Living behind the Orange Curtain in County.
Yeah. That's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
Wow. So you lived with them for a while?
Mm-hmm. About my first year.
I see. Yeah. Okay. And then what happened then? I mean, what did you decide you're going to do here?
Oh, my gosh. I had no plan. And I've learned that sometimes when you have a plan, it doesn't matter because life changes your plans.
Right.
So I just always have the attitude, I put one step in front of the other and just keep going. And I don't look back. I just keep going. I just was talking to a friend on the way here, talking to him about that. And he's like, "What are you doing today, Cal?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm on my way to do this radio." He's like, "What? tell me about this. How did you do this? How did this happen?" I said, "Well, I think I might even have my own show. Wow. I don't know. I'm thinking about it." And he's like, "Yep, that's you."
Yeah.
And I said, "I just, you know, keep moving forward." So when I got here, you know, I just... I was bartending. It was good money, you know, especially in L.A. Then it's like a great job to have here. It's so fun. I've waited on a gazillion celebrities and dated rock stars from meeting them and working with them. And,
wow.
Oh, I have stories. really fun, good stories. You know, like I said, it was an education for me. It was just such an education. But I knew I wanted to have my own business. And I will say in the bar business, when I started, it wasn't a business that was very friendly to females. I was one of the first female bartenders. I remember in Florida that literally the guys would beat me up. They would not allow me to wait. And I was 100 pounds and I would be waiting on someone and they would just put their arm in front of me and push me out of the way and take the order because they did not want a girl behind the bar. New York was a little more progressive and they welcomed females. I worked in New York. And then when I got to L.A., I was discriminated against. They would just flat out say, "No, we don't hire women." One place, I don't know if you remember it, it was Le Dome.
Oh, yeah.
Le Dome. They told me they would let me cook in the kitchen.
Really?
They put you in the kitchen and laughed. It was horrid.
Wow.
And, you know, not being one that will take no for an answer and I'm not easily beaten, I just kept going back. I just kept going, not back to the same place, but to different places. I just kept going. I was like, somebody's good. And, I was really good at it because I was very fast for whatever reason. I'm a good multitasker. I'm honest. I'm hardworking. you know, I was very likable and personal.
Totally outrageous, man. So, I mean,
I ended up in a really hot nightclub, Vertigo, which was, this is way back when, I don't even know how we got on the subject, but back in the old days. So I was, you know, there and set, and then from there I had no problem getting jobs and kind of broke the...
So you stayed bartending for a while?
I did that.
But you wanted to do your own business.
I dabbled in other things, too. Right. I had a booth at the swap meet with one of my best friends. Because we just wanted our own business. You know, we're young girls. No money, you know, no family with money, nobody to borrow money from to start a business. So we were just dabbling. And I just kept doing that. And then I also, I worked at William Morris. For a year. And
are you in the mailroom?
I started in the mailroom. Yep. Everybody starts in the mailroom.
Really?
I was clueless. Yeah. I didn't even know what it was when I went there. I went to a temp agency because I was bartending on the weekends. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'll go to a temp agency. Somebody told me, there's this thing called temping, and you just temp part-time. So they sent me to William Morris, and, you know, like I said, I just kind of take charge of things, and one thing led to another, and they put me in this position in the commercial department. And I was bored. I didn't have a lot to do. I was just kind of like a temporary helper here and there. So I would look for things to do, and I just took their picture room and totally rearranged it. I got on the phone. I was calling, like, I remember calling a Buzz Aldrin and telling him he's out of pictures. I had no idea who he was. I didn't know who he was. And one day, Sally Kellerman, I was trying to get a hold of her. She didn't show up for her. Oh, I don't know if I should be saying these things, but she's a lovely woman. But she didn't show up for her voiceover. And it was, you know, she gets paid huge money. She's big time. And so I had to keep calling her because she wasn't answering her phone. Nobody could find her. So I kept calling, calling, calling. Finally, she answers the phone. She's like, oh, darling, I'm with Ringo hanging out. Ringo Starr from the Beatles. So I said, well, Sally, they're waiting for you. So anyway, so she went to her appointment, and that was just fun and interesting. But that was, you know, when I first came to town and was kind of green and naive about everything. And still, you know, I've always believed that you can do anything. And I believe that of myself. And I just went with the flow, and then I dabbled in acting because I thought, oh, that looks fun, and you can get paid to do that.
But now you're competing with millions of people.
Clueless, and I never compared myself to other people. I did have that. I think that's probably from having the love to my parents being so strong and building my self-esteem, because I never looked at other people and compared myself. I didn't think, why, if they're doing it, why can't I? So anyway, so I dabbled into acting, and I really liked the process, and I studied Meisner technique, the Meisner technique, for a couple years. And but then I also didn't understand how competitive it is, and I would go on auditions, and if I couldn't find parking, I just remember so many times my agent going, you can't do that, and I would leave because I'd be like, well, there was no parking. And they'd be like, park a mile away if you have to, but you got to go to the audition. You can't just not show up. And I'd be like, well, I just, you know.
Oh, trust me.
If I can't find parking, I don't know what to do. I don't know.
I've done the same thing.
Yeah.
If I don't really care and it's not a good audition, like, it's like I'm only going to appease them. And and there's no parking. I'm not going. I'm like, universe says skip it. And that's
besides, it also means you're going to be competing with a lot of people because...
Well, that's what I'd be like, why am I going to have to park way down there? And I'm going to show up. There's going to be a room full of girls that look like me that do the same thing. And like, I'm like, eh, never mind. So I didn't really have it in me. It wasn't like, oh, my God, I have to be an actor. I have to. I liked it. It was fun.
But you didn't really want to pay the price of...
I didn't want it badly enough. And that's what I heard repeatedly. You don't want it badly enough. Because I'd be like, what? I have to do what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
I have to wear what? No, I'm not going to do that. And so I was always saying no. And they're like, you don't really want to do this, do you? And I was like, yeah, I do. I do. I have a headshot, honest. so I really thought I was an actor because I had a headshot. But, you know, I had fun and I learned and I felt like I felt like part of a community. I felt like a part of L.A. because everybody's trying to act in L.A. So it gave me a sense of feeling like I belonged.
Cool. So so you decided not to pursue this, though? Or
Yeah, I just dabbled. I really dabbled. Yeah. I ended up, you know, doing bit parts here and there, get a couple lines in a movie. Got cut out of things. I was on Days of Our Lives for a couple years. I played Deidre Hall's secretary
really?
For 2 years.
Wow.
And they had named
That's a nice gig,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, no, it was. I would love to have stuck with that.
Yeah.
I would love to have done that. But when her character got kidnapped and taken to a deserted island, and she was there for a good 6 months to a year, so she didn't have a secretary during that time.
Yeah.
So my character kind of got written off. And, you know, then I just drifted off. During that period, I started all my other personal growth workshops and everything. So.
Oh, so that's when you started that. Now, how did that come about?
As I was talking to you guys earlier, I went and got a flu shot about 12 years ago, and I was working really hard. I was working really hard I realized in my mid-30s I'm probably not going to get married again, so I'm on my own, so I need to bring in two incomes to get ahead. So I started working day and night all the time.
Wow.
And I got a flu shot, and it did something to me. Which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
Brigitta says she has a cure for me, so I'm excited.
I do.
But anyways, what it did, the good thing, after, you know, laying in bed for a couple years and feeling sorry for myself and then deciding, all right, this is just not going to, I'm not going to get better on my own, so I have to fight back. So I started fighting back, and I started my own business. So what I first did was I was strong enough to get up and get on the computer, so I would get on the computer, and I thought, well, what do I know how to do? Bartend. So I wrote a book about how to make cocktails.
Wow.
And then I saw, and it's funny, that's what I mean, you know, when you take action and you just do things.
Uh-huh.
I never have a plan, but I do things.
Mm.
That's why, like, here today, I don't know what my plan is, but I'm doing it. It came in my path. I'm here.
Okay. Yeah.
Like
Brigitta. Brigitta is a doer, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she,
yeah.
You know, if she wants to do something, she does it. She doesn't just talk about it.
I don't think. I just do.
Yeah.
And then
you do.
Sometimes
then
it gets
later.
Me in a lot of trouble later on. Whatever. It's done.
You know what I've found, though? Nothing's ever a waste of time. Like, my whole... it's all tied up. I feel like everything's tied up in a bow in my life right now, because all my experiences...
Everything
I'm
leads
using it
else.
All. And it's all gone.
Yep.
Like, all the acting classes and everything. Now I'm teaching these workshops. What I was going to say is I wrote this little cocktail book. And then... I was flipping through one of the local college catalogs, and it said instructors wanted. And I was like, bartending. Wonder if they have a bartending class. Nope. Okay, I made an appointment, booked me to teach a class. I'm like, I'm not a teacher. I've never taught. But all the acting classes that I'd taken, I was not shy to get up in front of people.
Mm.
I'm up there lecturing and teaching and demonstrating. And so what happened from teaching these bartending classes, little by little, it started out cocktail making, and then I interjected sales techniques and people skills and customer service, and my bartenders started getting hired as managers because
That's
they knew
really
so
cool.
much about the business.
Mm-hmm.
And they would send me notes and go like, oh my gosh, thank you so much, but I got hired as the manager and I don't know what to do. And so then I started writing management book, and now I have a management class too. And then just through the years, my students would write me these notes and letters. And one girl, you know, I'll never forget, she said, you make me feel like a winner. And because I was always from my method of teaching is always from a positive perspective and, you know, praise and you did good and try to make everyone feel valued and everyone. Because I think in life, everyone has a place. I got an email from a student. He had taken the class about 6 months earlier, and he had been in Iraq. He was a vet from Iraq, and he said, you know, I got back and I had post-traumatic stress disorder, and some of the things that you said just made me believe in myself and made me, like, I feel like you really saved my life. You're an angel.
Mm.
And those were his exact words.
Wow.
And that made me feel like, okay, how can I do more? Because then, now I feel responsibility.
Yeah.
I feel like, oh, I need to do more. If I can really touch people this way, I want to do it. And so then I had been keeping notes, you know, and was always building on the class, and one thing led to another, and I started this class called Who Do You Think You Are? I was asked to give
That's
a
cool.
speech in front of a group of girls for National Women's Month or something. And so I titled the speech, I thought, with young girls, I'll go, Who Do You Think You Are? You know, kind of in a sarcastic tone, but then also, like, really, who do you think you are? Because that's who you're going to become, whoever you think you are.
Right.
And so then I started a class called Who Do You Think You Are? And then that TV show came about, Who Do You Think You Are? And then people started signing up for the class thinking it's a genealogy class. I'm like, no.
That's really funny.
Finding who you are in your head and in your heart. So I changed the name to Find Your Excellence, which is what I teach now. And I wrote the workbook. And I brought my little workbook here if you guys want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about Who Do You Think You Are is when I was teaching it at Santa Monica College, this woman walked into the class one day, and I looked at her, and I was like, I didn't have my glasses on, and I said, I was thinking to myself, she looks like Deidre Hall. She's beautiful. This woman's beautiful. She looks like Deidre Hall. And I looked at her and I said, what's your name? And she said, Dee. And I said, she said, what's your name? And I said, Kelly. And we were both, she didn't have her glasses on either. We're like, oh my God. So she had signed up to take the class because she was just like kind of, she was going to do it with a girlfriend, she told me. And she was just, you know, soul searching and just dabbling and thought it sounded like a fun class. She probably thought she was going to learn about her family history too. But anyway, it was just interesting and fun that you know, here she was, and I played her secretary on
the show. Wow, that's pretty cool. What a small world.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. So so now you started getting satisfaction from what you're doing and everything. Mm-hmm. No discrimination, women, men, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. This is cool.
Yeah. So, okay, so now let's talk a little bit about what you do now and everything. For everybody that wants to check out Kelly's site, it's Kelly, K-E-L-L-I-E, Nicholson.com. And,
I love your little drawings in your book. Thank you. So cute. Thank you.
Yeah, even when you go to the website, the mouse turns into a butterfly. That's pretty cool.
Actually, if they go to findyourexcellence.com, it's the same thing, too. It'll take them to the same website.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
That's
Find
pretty
your
cool.
Excellence.
Okay,
yeah.
findyourexcellence.com.
Yeah.
And,
did you take NLP?
What I did is I took a life coaching.
Okay.
I got certified to be a life coach and then master life coach. But, you know, I do my own thing. I have my own way. It's effective for some people. It's not effective for other people. You know, everybody does an evaluation after the class. And a lot of times, you know, I got an email once from a girl 2 years later. She's like, I don't know if you're the Kelly Nicholson that taught the class at Santa Monica College, so but cool. I just wanted to let you know that class changed my life. It put me on a different path, blah, blah, blah. So I get, you know, a lot of emails like that.
And I want a book.
On the evaluation, sometimes they'll go, well, I didn't really like the cover of the book, and she talked too loud, which I can be loud, because I'm used to talking in big groups. And if you put me in a small room, I'm too loud.
You're like, what?
And having done theater and everything. And so, you know, I would be bothered by it because I'd be like, oh no, you know, I didn't help them. I'd feel, you know, like a failure because I'd be like, oh my God, I gotta help everybody, I gotta save the world. So I started, you know, just doing research and researching other, you know, people that I don't like to call myself a spiritual guru because I'm not at that level by any means. I'm kind of in the middle, you know. I'm more enlightened than the masses, but way beneath the real enlightened people.
I will teach you thy ways.
So that's
she's
what I mean.
She's on her path now.
Yeah, I have my own style, my own ways. But you know what I learned is I can't make people not be negative. I just can't do it for them. It's got to be a lesson that they and when they walk in the room, and so, you know, I started doing an introduction of explaining that when they walk in, the first one of the first things I say is, if you came here because you think I have all the answers to your life, you might as well leave right now because I have none. I'm just here to guide you, and by doing the exercises in the book, it's just self-analysis. They're just exploring what they want out of life. Like, I don't have any of those answers. I'm just like the guide, the person here, you know, handing out the papers and giving the directions. And in the class and Find Your Excellence, we do all kinds of fun activities. They work all day. It's like an all-day class. They work. We do a love doll. We do a treasure box where you put all your little treasures, which are the people that mean something to you. It's nothing physical. It's people. And you write things and describe them, why you love them. And so it has meaning. And then I tell them, you know, when you're feeling down and you feel like nobody loves you, nobody cares, you pull all those treasures out. So we just do things like that all day long. And hopefully, I think pretty much everyone leaves with a really good feeling and like they got something. Like, you can't spend that whole day looking at yourself and answering questions. And we do a page of gratitude, all the people you're grateful for and why. And then I tell them, you know, after the class ends, so it's so not over. It's just the beginning. Right. So now you need to tell those people why you're grateful in your life.
Yeah. Now, these methods, did you come up with them yourself?
I really don't know where they came from. That's why, you know, I'm like, you guys were talking about religion. I am not religious. I was raised religious. I was raised a Christian. But I got away from the religion because I saw that it was limiting and divisive. But I definitely believe in a spiritual power, a higher power, God, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And it's with me and it's in me. It's always in my heart. So I just feel like I'm being guided most of the time.
Really? So, but you originated all these methods and everything.
Yeah,
it's not
Well, through the years I've read books and I've watched lots of Oprah. But I, in the process, when I started all this, I didn't want to read anybody else's books because I didn't want to plagiarize. I didn't want to be influenced. I wanted to use what I know. So I owned it. So it was really like when I'm teaching it or talking it, it's me. It's coming from me.
Right.
It's what I know to be true.
Right.
My truth. So, yeah, I kind of just came up with these things. And through the years, probably things that I did on my own, you know, learning to be grateful and... Mm-hmm. You know, everybody thinks they're positive. When The Secret, they had that movement, The Secret, and everybody was like, oh, my God, it's the greatest thing. And I noticed it didn't really change people. People are like, and, I, you know, even on Facebook, you'll see people putting, be positive. And then the next day, they're like complaining about somebody was, you know, talking about themselves too long on the phone or something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's real positive. And even, you know, everything that I criticize anyone for, I've done.
Right.
That's the only way I can see it.
Right.
I've done every mistake. And I feel like, though, that's why I have more to share with people and a greater understanding.
Yeah.
And some mistakes I've done more than once. had to learn, had to make sure. But anyway, you know, I just try to come from a positive place. And I even there's a section in the book about retraining your brain to be positive. Because when I after The Secret, I kept thinking, well, I'm positive. I'm so positive. And I'm pretty positive. I pretty much, like, I don't dwell on negative. But I would find myself going, I would be saying the most horrid things when people are driving. That's the worst time. I am the most evil, awful person when I'm behind the wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would just be thinking really bad things, and I'd be like, well, that's not very positive, Kelly. I'd be like, but you know what? I'm driving. I mean, come on, they are an idiot. You're an idiot. But it bothered me because I was like, well, what is this thing? They kept saying you have to be positive all the time. I'm like, all the time? Like, even when people are idiots and you're driving? Even on the roads in California? So I started retraining, and I started thinking if somebody cuts me off, I'd think, okay, jerk. And then I think, oh, well, that's not positive. What can I say? Well, maybe their wife's having a baby and they're trying to get to the hospital. Maybe they have to pick their kid up from school and the little boy's going to be waiting there and crying. And so I would try to give them an excuse so that I could be more positive about it.
Right.
If, you know, if I'm stuck in traffic on a freeway in LA and there's an accident, I'm not going to sit there and go, ah, this stinks. I'm going to be late. Instead, I start praying for the person in the accident. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, I'm thankful that it's not me, but please be with those people. So anyway, and when I started doing that, it really did become better. And I have to say, you know, I questioned myself when I started thinking I'm going to be a life coach. And I thought, well, who am I to be a life coach? I'm negative. I'm cranky sometimes. I'm obnoxious sometimes. I'm abrasive. I thought, I can't be a life coach. I can't tell people. But I realized that I do have a skill, a talent, whatever. I do reach some people. In a good way, in a positive way. I do have some good qualities. I'm not all awful. So I just went with it. I felt compelled for whatever reason.
Now, you said you were certified as a life coach. How do you get certified? Who certifies you?
You take a class. There's different organizations that will certify you. You don't have to be.
Right.
There are people that are life coach. They just have a skill. Like, you know, it's kind of like that thing that I think I have it naturally. I don't really go by what I was taught.
Yeah.
Right
or wrong. And it works, but it doesn't work for everyone.
Right.
You know, some people I don't reach. And no life coach will, because there's someone for everyone. That's why there's so – and the self-help movement is a huge movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's so many people teaching it and doing it.
Right.
Because there's – you know, different messages for different people.
Right. And you mix spirituality with that as well, right? That's what you were...
Well, I'm spiritual, but I don't push it on anyone. Some people are religious, and if you're religious and that's your belief, I really... You know, religion bothers me when it becomes violent and when it becomes negative. Otherwise, I have no problem with it. I think it's beautiful and good, and I was raised, you know, I said my Bible verses in front of the church, and I was very dedicated and a devoted little Christian girl. But I just had questions as I got older, and I realized, for me, Christianity is the religion that I've really studied and that I know. It seemed like a lot of fairy tales, and a lot of it was outdated. I didn't like the parts of the Bible that don't honor women, the violence. You know, here we're preaching love and peace, and then it's a very violent book. So I think it's a good book. I just think it's out of date. I think it needed to be updated, and I didn't believe. And I feel like very wise men in that time wrote a book that people needed to use to live their life, but they couldn't understand, they couldn't grasp. You know, I feel like God is a scientific concept. I think it's going to be explained one day scientifically.
Right.
It's a very powerful force, and it's real. It's like electricity. You turn on a light, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't understand how it works, but you use it every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really think we're coming to, and we will have that understanding one day of God. But people that are raised religious, they're told not to believe anything else.
Right.
And if you believe anything else, then you're
then
not
you're going to hell.
Yeah, you're going to hell, and you're not true to your religion. And I had a problem with that because my God loves everyone,
right.
and my God's not arrogant. That's an arrogance. My God wants us just to be good and doesn't really, there's a section in Find Your Excellence about karma. Cause some, you know,
I
people
read
that, will say,
yeah.
Oh, you give, you get what you give. And no, sometimes you get things that you didn't deserve. Mm. You know, look at those little kids, you know, in Connecticut, just, that's karma, for crying out loud. That infuriates me when people talk about karma.
Right.
I so don't believe in karma. I believe in consequences. Mm. So I believe that when you do things and bad things happen because of something you've done, that's a consequence. That's not karma. And then sometimes bad things happen to good people because they're being taught a lesson that's going to make them, maybe propel them to greatness, maybe teach them something to so that they handle life better. It's going to make them a better person. It doesn't mean they're a bad person to begin with.
Right.
See, and I understand what you're saying. I do believe in karma, mm-hmm. but how I look at it, like, no, the children, they're kids. They didn't do anything bad, like, or anything. But what I'm saying is, I don't know, I believe you pre-write your life before you come into it. So these children, like, it's not them they're teaching a lesson to. It's maybe the parents.
The parents, right, yeah.
And the families
That's
need to learn something.
That's what they say, yeah.
And so hopefully from that experience, the tragic experience that it was, the parents go and they do something and they change for the better to help the world in whatever way.
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, these, I know this sounds crazy, but whatever. This is me. So these kids pre-wrote their life, the souls of them pre-wrote their life, if this was going to happen at this time, whatever, and it was going to affect the families and the parents to hopefully, you know, spin off and
right.
having them help somehow.
Yeah, like in the Kabbalah, I learned that, you know, like sometimes why would a six-month-old baby die or something, you know? And they're saying it's because they already completed their journey as a soul, and they're coming here to help other people,
right.
other souls. So they're born to these parents, and then these things happen and stuff. You know,
it's a lesson for them around them, not really for them.
That's just that's what I believe.
Yeah.
But I just say it in a different way because I feel like a lot of people when they say karma, they say it from a perch. Mm-hmm. Like, well, bad things happen to you, and it's because you must have done something
wrong. You're right.
So that part I don't like. That's why I kind of redefined it for myself and my purposes.
Right.
Because I think too many people think when something bad happened to someone, well, they must be a bad person.
Right.
And they're very it causes judgment.
Right.
So I don't like that part of the you know, karma definition.
Yeah.
Okay, we're out of time, guys. So, Kelly, let's promote your website again. Everybody go
I didn't get to talk about Tales of the Lioness, which is what I came here for. My new book is coming. I have to come back then. Tales of the Lioness. Mm-hmm. It's a collection of stories written by women who have overcome horrendous obstacles with great courage.
Wow. And that's where can amazing. People find that?
It's not published yet. It's in the process, so that's why I have to come back.
Yeah.
But on the findyourexcellence.com website.
Okay, so it would be there.
Yeah.
Okay. Findyourexcellence.com. Check out Kelly Nicholson. She's got some great stuff, workshops. There's a section on the lioness as well. Speaker, coach, everything. So you pretty much cover the whole gamut of it.
Why you
it went so fast. I was worried I wasn't going to have anything to say.
No, I know you
You're
did.
Like, that never happens.
Yeah, no, it never happens. Anyway, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All the best
thank
to you.
You.
Brigetta, thank you. Thanks, everybody,
thank
for
you.
Listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Bye.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sam in the Morning with Brigetta is an L.A. Talk Radio production where we say what we want.